347-996.
Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Well, hello, everybody. We have a problem. Well, here we are. Hello, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. Nice to talk to you today. Jim Masters is not here today. I'm Doug Llewellyn sitting in, and I'm really excited because we're going to continue a series of conversations that Jim has been having with a highly accomplished infectious disease doctor. She is very, very knowledgeable on the subject. If you've heard any of their conversations, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Her name is Dr. Vatsala Sastry. She's based in Florida, in Brookville, Florida, and it's been a challenge to talk to her because there's so many interesting questions. You want to know which one is the best to ask, but let me tell you a little bit about what she does. From such things as monkeypox, polio, influenza, meningitis, the world has been facing truly a myriad of extremely concerning infectious disease health threats. And as we continue to battle COVID, even though the president says the pandemic is over, COVID really is still around, and it's had devastatingly effects on the world. It's claimed hundreds of thousands of lives. There are other infectious diseases that spread rapidly around the world, and that we don't hear about that much. And the big point is you have to remain on high alert for the possible potential of seeing one of these infectious disease break out, like COVID. There could be a surge of COVID in the fall, in the winter, approaching in the colder months. We have to focus on strengthening the U.S. healthcare system's preparedness and response plan. It's imminent. We have to make infectious diseases a global precedence and an absolute priority. Our guest, Dr. Sastry, in case you haven't heard her yet, she was inspired to become an infectious diseases doctor so she could help people live longer and free of pain. What a great, great reason to become an infectious disease doctor. She emphasizes how a simple vaccine or a drug could mean a lifetime of freedom from illness. Infections can be absolutely cured with a proper diagnosis, and her lifelong mission is being able to help patients live healthy and successful lives. So we're going to bring her on the mic with us. It's a really pleasure to welcome Dr. Vatsala Sastry. Doctor, am I pronouncing your name correctly? If I'm not, you straighten me out right now, okay? How am I doing?
You are perfect. You speak perfectly and you pronounce it perfectly, and thank you. It is an absolute honor to be here and to communicate with everybody. Thank you, sir.
You know, it's interesting because my dad was a doctor, and he was involved with the National Association of the Infantile Paralysis Association. I've forgotten the correct name of it, but he was around working with hospitals when polio was in its hugest outbreak. And, of course, as we all know, the Salk vaccine really put an end to polio and changed the lives of millions of people. But you know, within the last week, I have heard some comments about polio breaking out in areas of this country. Have you heard that? Is that something that you're aware of?
Absolutely, sir. It has broken out in New Jersey and New York, and it is all in the small lakes and where the water is contained. And if that water is not removed on a regular basis, not that they're not doing it, they're not doing any errors, but unusually they were able to find a small child that got it. And then immediately the NIH and the IDSA have to, and the CDC has to go there. They started doing the analysis because when the child, he became paraplegic. And they said, oh, my God, a 4-6-year-old kid become paraplegic. So they did complete analysis. And you're four. You know, as an IDSA, we have certain rules. So they did all of the protocol, and they were shocked to see that he had poliovirus. They said, today, poliovirus? That was 100 years ago. So then what they have done since then, of course, they tried to do whatever they could to help the child, but he's still paraplegic. Well, they're trying to work on multiple things to get him better. But what the infectious disease group has to do is to analyze the entire area. And they did it, and even I was shocked. So they said there's over 600-700 cases, but most people did okay, and some of them got vaccines. And if they don't have vaccines, you actually get the poliovirus. That's a shocker of shockers. So I immediately Googled and I checked everything. So definitely it is exposure in the water. The one thing I do want to say, I have learned about a lot of viruses and organisms. They do exist everywhere. But with the way we protect our body and lift ourselves, and our body has its own military, and we lift it to a high level, then we are protected against it. But it does exist everywhere, sir. It does exist. That's why we have to pay attention.
Let me ask you a question about polio, because I thought it had been totally eradicated. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but do people, is it automatic that people still get inoculated with the shot vaccine? I guess is the primary vaccine that is still, I guess, in use against polio, unless they've perfected a new one. But polio had all but disappeared, hadn't it?
Absolutely. And what we do is, it hasn't completely disappeared yet. The volume has reduced. And when the volume reduces, they look at all the numbers. And when it is lower, then they recognize that the entire population around the world did a little bit better, so there was no problem. You know, this is way post-World War II when they really got rigid on it. And particularly around the 2000, it slowly got much, much better. And they were documenting, and they said, my God, it looks really, really good, because everybody's gotten vaccines for like 50, 60, 70 years. Everyone has done very well. This is fantastic. But then what has somehow happened, and they have to document that, and they documented that everyone is doing much better, that we see much lower cases. So then mildly they slowly start wondering if they don't have to give the vaccine, and they semi-held back, which even I am not completely aware of that, because I don't know the exact rules that came out. But apparently nowadays a lot of the public is sort of trying to avoid the vaccines. Now, I'd like to say a few things about this one. Only in our country, United States, we do that, but in all other countries like Asia, Africa, no, mandatory. Mandatory. They have workers and people that go directly to the house and directly give the vaccines. Oh, yeah. And you cannot not do it. They won't leave the house. They will sit there and make sure that I learned all of those things too, everywhere. And I love traveling around, and I look into a lot of things, and that's what I saw. So in all those countries, but in our dear United States, you know, we're very soft, and we don't force the people. And as you know, a lot of people don't want the COVID vaccines, but it is critical. Everyone who has gotten the COVID vaccine does better, because our immune system goes up. And once the immune system goes up, which is our weapon, our military, it fights the virus. And that makes a big difference. And always, 95-98% of the time it works very well, but maybe that 1-2% won't. But that's good enough. If it's above 95%, it does work. So basically that's what it is. So what I have learned about this new poliovirus, even I was shocked. I said, in New York City, United States, it's the greatest country in the world. They're so particular about infections. They're so particular about treatments. They're so particular about all of it, as other Asian countries and all African countries. But in Asian countries, they know they will not make it. So they force it. So coming back here to see this new poliovirus really blew me away too. I was like, oh, my gosh, because I do have a lot of relatives up north where you guys stay, and I'm saying, oh, my gosh, so where did that come from? How did that come from? And then I started doing all the research, and as I said, it does exist on the ground everywhere. Yep.
Interesting. Well, that's scary to think about polio possibly making another outbreak. But at least we do know there is a vaccine that has been working for 50, 60 years and has really done a very effective job of eradicating polio. So it's still available. It's there. The shot vaccine is still there and still being used, right?
And our correct. And our schools. And when we work in the hospital, for example, workers, when you work in a big company, when you work for government companies, or when kids go to school, they do ask you, show me the list, show me the list, show me all of the list. And they look at the list, and that list has to be there to get in. And if the list is not there, then they'll say, I don't think you can come to this school, or you can't come to this college, you can't come to this facility, you have to educate at home, because if you're not vaccinated, you cannot come. Yeah, we do have rules.
Exactly. Let me ask you about another infectious disease that is being talked about, and that is monkeypox. How dangerous is monkeypox, and is it spreading? You would know more than any of us. Talk to me about it. And what is it?
Absolutely. It is a virus, the same virus, and of course, who does it come from? The monkey, just like HIV came from. But there is one advantage of this. It comes, it irritates, it ruins the skin, et cetera, creates a big mess and your whole skin. And within about 2-3 weeks, even if you don't take some treatment and help, it slowly goes away. Why? Because our immune system is that powerful. It gets up and it attacks, and it takes time because it has never seen a monkeypox before virus, so it will get up and it'll slowly work on it. And it's like the smallpox, you know, and we all have had smallpox, I mean, but the younger people now don't have the smallpox vaccine. So coming back to that, this monkeypox, it originally came from the monkeys, of course, just like HIV virus, and all these viruses, and all animals are sicker than us, but they, well, not sicker, but they have more viruses, but they handle better. Their immune system is very potent, and that's how they make it through the whole thing. But we as humans, we're very advanced bodies and minds and everything, and so whenever we are not like the animals, we tend to get a little sicker than them. So coming back to that, this monkeypox slowly has started, and of course, I mean, no, nothing negative about anybody, but they find that the way that it spreads, it's not completely like HIV, like just through the mouth and through the genital areas, but the skin is how it can spread, and that's the thing. So basically, someone sits on a ground or someone sits on a table, etc., and then they have something, and it spreads out there, and then someone else comes and sits down, immediately can get into the skin. So what it does is it's about a couple of weeks. It irritates mainly the skin. It doesn't straight go to the groin area, but the entire skin area, hands, legs, chest, and then it just irritates. Then you get a little fever, cough, cold, and then slowly, eventually it gets out. And by the way, in the hospital I saw 4 such cases, but I have ordered for the monkeypox virus. I still haven't gotten the answer, and it's been 2 weeks. I haven't gotten the answer yet. So, but still, we protected them, and we told them just stay at home because we saw big, big infections on the legs. One was 10 years old, another one 42, and the other one was 65 who goes on dialysis. So, you know, then you see how our brain works. Oh, my gosh, is somebody exposed? Okay. So then we have to notify where that person goes for dialysis that, you know, we're waiting for the test, and it hasn't come back yet. So maybe they can be isolated in a room. See, that? So that's how the monkeypox has spread out. It has been in Africa in the past in a while, but it does spread because now everyone travels all around the world. So all you need is 1 or 2 or 3 cases, and that's how it spreads. And unfortunately, it came out through the men, and it started to spread to others, and that's what they were talking about. Yeah.
It's not fatal. Is that correct, Uncle Monkeypox?
No, it's not. No. It goes away in 2 to 3 weeks, and you just get cough, shortness of breath, might be admitted a little bit, but bulk of the time you're not admitted. You just have to go to either dermatologist and get skin. No, the death is not there for that, definitely not. And the one advantage with HIV also, there's no immediate death. You know, even once you get treatment, everything, you live the whole life without a problem. So that's one tremendous advantage of that, yeah.
But is there a vaccine? Is there a vaccine for monkeypox? Have they developed that yet? There is.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's already done, and it's connected with the smallpox virus, which they have had all along. And as you said, but poliovirus, smallpox, they slowly backed off on it. They did not insist on people getting it because it was not there. But now look what happens. Something immediately comes right out, right? So we have to rework on it again. Yes.
Let me ask you a question about another disease. I think it's more of a bacterial infection, but we hear about it every night. We've heard about it for a long, long time. Tuberculosis. Is that still posing a threat?
It's sort of a yes and no. It depends on where. Now, for example, wherever you have a very high population who's exposed, I can just talk to you about tuberculosis. I've done a lot of work on it. Again, once again, it's Africa and Asia where there's a large volume of people. That's what it is. And it's the temperature and, exposure to a lot of the animals all running around and this and that. And so that's how we tend to get it. And tuberculosis can, believe it or not, this is a very tough thing for me to say, but it can be in the ground, it can be in items, and when you just, you know, touch at it, it can get into your skin. Oh, yeah, and not only that, and then, of course, through the respiratory thing. It gets in, and that's where it causes a major problem. So coming back to this tuberculosis, yes, because of the extensive traveling, it has people are getting it, and what we are doing a lot is asking for testing. As a matter of fact, that you said that a patient came to my office and today, and a very hardworking person, and works at a jail. And what I love about those lot of facilities is what they ask. So they ask for every year to get the test, and all the tests were negative for 8 years, and this year it's positive. Now, how can you explain that, right? So you were maybe exposed to somebody, and so then I asked, so do you check all the all the persons in the jail? Do you check all of them? He goes, many times we do, but not all of them. But if somebody has coughing and has some major issues with the lung, without a doubt, we send it for. So for this particular person, I had to order a TB Quantiferon Gold, and I will get the answer. And a smoker, so I don't think it is really tuberculosis, because I asked a full history, never exposed, nothing. So the only thing is, could he might have been mildly exposed in jail, or was it just so it's not really tuberculosis. The main tuberculosis, what we're talking about, is the one that really causes those other illnesses. But there's another variant of it, which is much milder. And that we have treatments and everything, and it goes away in about first 4 or 5 months. So that's a different angle. So that's what the TB Quantiferon Gold, it'll say positive, and then it'll say incomplete. It'll say that. So that's how we can analyze it.
Well, that's good
and
news.
The way
that's
it is
part of it.
Right. I will tell you one quick thing about that tuberculosis, what you express. I never realized that, but apparently in Hawaii we have it, and we have it in West Virginia. How would you imagine West Virginia is such a beautiful American place? Why is that? So then I have seen a couple of citizens also from there. So then I'd say every time I do that, I come home and I have to open the books and I have to look. And, West Virginia, not regular Virginia, but West Virginia. Regular Virginia has so many universities, and they're so picky, and they're very, you have to test, you have to do this, you have to do that, all the hospitals. But in West Virginia, there are a large number of cases. I think they're not diagnosed, actually. Yeah.
Do me a favor, Doctor. I'm fascinated by your studies and what you give us a little. Our audience, treat us a little bit to your background. You've been in this field for obviously a good while. Where are you functioning right now? I know you're in Florida. You weren't there forever, though. You're in Brookville, Florida. Tell me about your background, if you don't mind, because it's fascinating.
Okay. Well, that's the wonderful thing in this world now. You know, wherever we are, we all love to come to the USA, which is the greatest and the wonderful place, and we enjoy it. And so my daddy, we were in South India, Bangalore, and we grew up there. And my father, he was a very, very intelligent gentleman, and he was very simple, sort of a semi-poverty area, but he had a brain beyond a brain. And the one advantage in India is you learn multiple languages, and he was learning. And one of his uncles was an attorney. He slowly started, and he said, "Boy, I need to rise above this." So he quietly went to Bombay, which is now known as Mumbai, and then he got his 2 degrees and he got his law degree. And then he was just reading, looking around everything. I mean, we're talking in the 50s. And then Kennedy was the president here, and he applied, and then he wanted to do the business school, and he did it in Maryland. And it was so wonderful. This is amazing. I'm also, my dear military friend and me were trying to get that daddy's, you have to write a very big book and send it in, and then they will approve, yes, no. So he got his, he definitely got his green card right away, and daddy got in there. And then slowly after that, within the next 2 years, he became Singer Sewing Machine Company, the knitting products manager of the entire world, because he was so unique. He could speak 8 languages, and he's already a lawyer with 2 other degrees. So he's a very tough. So we also were raised like that. So I immediately came to New York when I was me and my brother when we were small. Grew up in New York, which was fantastic. So we, we're learning all kinds of things and growing up and doing things. And we kept working that way. And my father had to go from New York to, and he was one of the top ones in India. So we had to move back and forth. Imagine me and my son immediately went to India, and slowly we had to absolutely adapt. We're totally American. We have to adapt to that again. And we did that, and we learned a lot of things and came back. And we said, "Boy, when are we going to go back to the U.S., go back home?" So we came here. So basically, I was exposed very much in New York. I did a lot of undergraduate education in New York. And then in Chicago, I got my graduate degree. And then Tulsa, I got my graduate degree, which was in chemical engineering here and computer engineering. And then after I finished that, back and forth, my father was still in Mumbai. So I said, well, let me try to see if I can get into India, because I just, it was around, you know, the 80s. I just didn't want to stay by myself here. I wasn't that potent as yet. So I said, so I went back over there. Now imagine I have to study in India. And I always wanted to be a surgeon. My brother's a surgeon. He's a cardiac transplant gentleman. He's a cardiac surgeon. He's brilliant. So I kind of wanted to do that. And that was my goal. But when I was studying in India, that was just fantastic. What is amazing is how they manage the people. And that's where I kind of slowly learned. And the CDC and India are very close together. They really work together on everything. And the CDC is fantastic. They told them, this is how you do it, this is how you do it. And so back and forth and back and forth. And India, the main thing for them, what I learned, to absolutely control tuberculosis and the other infections that are a big thing, and they want to ensure that they control that and how they do it. And then I learned, and I did some studying there, and I went to a rural area, and a lot of other kids said, oh, can we get out of it? Can we not do this? I said, no, I want to go there because I want to see it. So I went there, and I learned, and they go straight to the home, and things are written on the top. That they put some funny things so only they know what it is. See, that's the level of control, Doug, that they have. Then after that, I came here, and then I also go toying back and forth, and then finally I said, you know what, let me do infectious disease. And I did it in the greatest place in the world, I'm telling you, University of Pennsylvania. And Dr. Fauci would come and see us every Friday, and we have performed in front of him, and our professors were excellent. They taught us they're outstanding teaching, and they taught us so many different things. And when we had to do analysis, of course, Fridays was with Dr. Fauci. And on the other day, once a month, I think what we would do, New York, Delaware, yes, all of them will come, and there would be over almost 1,000 people sitting there, students and us, and we'd lecture upon lecture upon lecture. And what's amazing about infectious disease, a case from Africa, a case from India, a case from China, a case from Canada, and from South America, and case after case after case they teach. So that's where I became like that, you know, it just totally got into me, and I said, my gosh, we can transform, and we can have the most beautiful earth on this, you know, this entire universe. And you know, we need to. I'm more excited how to control those kind of viruses and bacteria and bugs, and how can we control it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What a fascinating background. That's just incredible listening to you talk. You know, we're going through the half hour. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Fall is coming on here now in the United States. What are the things people should be most on guard for when it comes to, you know, getting sick from something, you know, whether it's the flu or whatever else may be brewing out there? How would you answer that? What are the most serious threats facing us now when it comes to infectious diseases?
Right. So when the summer is one different matter, but once the winter starts coming, when the temperature is cold, you get different viruses. When it's hot, you get different viruses. The virus can't survive the heat, believe it or not. Some bacteria can survive the heat. So coming back when it's wintertime, as this country, which is fantastic, we always have to get the influenza virus. So we will get that. But now that we know about this COVID, they are very concerned that we'll get the worst types of COVID viruses during the wintertime. So they say, just like you get the influenza vaccine, boom, you'll get another COVID vaccine right at the side. So those are the two main ones. But there is another very main one. It's called the Zika virus. And that is a deadly virus, very deadly, which came from South America. And it came and it affected a couple of people in Florida. And immediately the NIH and the CDC, and they all had to go down there and they had to do a lot of analysis. And they saw that this Zika virus, my goodness, I mean, it can attack, people get a little sick, but when it's mainly affecting women, and if they're pregnant or the baby is just born, the baby gets it, it completely destroys the brain, which is shocking. And that how is this virus is totally removing the brain? And that they started noticing that a lot in Brazil, there was a lot of such cases in Brazil. And everybody rammed up on it, and they have to learn how to control it. And imagine coming out in Florida, because, you know, we have a lot of people coming into, you know, Miami and a lot of people from South America, because everyone loves the United States. So they love it, and they come here.
And they love Florida.
Developing cases. Exactly. So what has to be just like New York, just like California, you know, travelers. So immediately the NIH has to start rigidly working on it, and they did. And they found that it was going through the bugs. They found it was going through the bugs and the birds as well. So what they did is they immediately got out to some chemicals, and they told everybody, we're very sorry, but all your birds are going to die in this area. We can't help it. And some people objected to that. They said, no, we have to, because we don't want the citizens to get it. So they were able to do it. And guess what? It's controlled. Zika virus is controlled in the Florida.
Spell that for me. Spell it for me, doctor. Spell it. Zika?
Zika. Z-I-K-A. And it came mainly from Brazil. And when the children are born, so a lady's pregnant. The first child she had didn't have any problem. Now she's pregnant, and when the baby's born, the brain is like shrunk, and the kid eyes can just look here and there, can't talk much, can't anything, because the entire intelligence of our brain is gone because of this. So that like just freaked all of us out. We said, oh my God. And then between you and me, even we're all scared. We all, you know, want to be grandmoms, this, that. It's scary. So we wanted to control this. I talked to everyone, called NIH, which is what is fantastic in this country, is the way they work. Then they want to remove the horrible things and they control it. So that's it. So basically, that's another vaccine that they're trying to work on. So without a doubt, you know, taking the vaccine makes a huge difference. And I have great respect for our military. I've learned it from them. I have respect for everyone. But with the military, wherever they go, there is no argument. You know, if they have to go suddenly to South Africa, or they have to go to the Middle East or wherever, they've got to get 4, 5, 6 vaccines, sir. They've got to get the vaccine, and that helps them. They don't get those horrible illnesses that are protected from it, because then they're exposed to a lot of it, right? The water, the air, the trees, the plants, they're exposed to a lot. So that's how they have to protect themselves. It does help. So this is what is so great in America. They protect and they don't allow bad things to get out of control. So which
they can help it, although you must say COVID got out of control there for a good bit, no question. Let me ask you a little bit more about this Zika virus. What are the signs? This is something that someone could potentially get, right? I mean, you say it's hit people in Florida,
right?
And it's ultra serious if it affects the brain. What are the symptoms? Is it like the flu or something like that, or is it totally different?
You just get like fevers, chills, and you just act a little bit weird. But there is one amazing thing about the human body. Once our brain has developed to that level, we adults, we get it, but we're not that sick. But then we may expose it to our kids. That's when it's even worse. Because, see, a child's brain, particularly when it's inside and it's not come out yet, that's when it was the worst option. But if the child is small and as it's growing, you know, it can affect it without a doubt. So, but we adults do better with it because we don't, you know, we just get sick, headache, this, that, collapsing, that kind of stuff goes on. Then slowly, you know, we try to do something and fix it. But the diagnosis is the key. So, but it's the children, yeah. And, you know, that's the other main thing, is how to make the diagnosis. That is the one. That's where the scientists are very, very important, and they have to make diagnosis quickly. It takes time. It's not always easy, you know. Out of 100, it's not 100%, so sometimes we only 60, 70, 80% we get the answer. But at least 20, 30 times we don't get the answer. But the child, when you see it, immediately you can figure it out. So, yeah, the Zika virus is something that is quite deadly. Don't want to sound negative, make anybody feel very nervous about it. But it is without
there, right?
a doubt for young children. Yeah, without a doubt for young children. And what's amazing is, you know, there was this fantastic American.
Doctor, I'm sorry. You know what? We're almost out of time. I need to tell everybody that you're coming back next week. We're going to continue this conversation into infectious diseases and what we have to look out, what we have to worry about, and how we can prevent, ourselves from getting infected by some of these really terrible diseases. So I really look forward to having you back, Doctor. Okay? Dr. Vatsala Sastry, Brookville, Florida. It's just a delight to have you as a guest. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you so much. Okay?
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you very much, sir. Okay.
You are very, very welcome. What an amazing guest. I look forward to being with her next week when she comes back. Thank you.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit CloseUpTelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
Boy, do we ever. I'm Doug Llewellyn, and that's it for today, everybody. See you next time. Till then, take care. Bye for now.